Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah! These are not the 10 best defensive players in this class, and these definitely will not be the 10 first defensive players drafted. But what they are, at least to us, are the 10 most fun defensive players to watch. It's our annual 10 gem special here on Bootleg Football, defensive player edition. EJ and I each chose 5 defensive prospects in this class that, you know, if we just want to pour ourselves something nice and throw it on the old TV before bed just to get some feel-good vibes, these are who we go to first. But before we do all that, before we get into our first names, EJ, how was your flight home from USC Pro Day, which we just went to yesterday?
Yeah, didn't I just see you?
You did.
Which was a pleasure. I am mainlining coffee, which is really not that much different than what I was doing while I was there, but I have not stopped. That is the diet now, is the hot brown and lots of it. Let's go. But I'm excited. This is, again, one of our favorite days of the year. We already did offense for this year. The response to that's been terrific. So thank you all for checking that out. We think you're going to have just as much fun with this list because we sure did. We talked about it a little bit. This list is harder for us a little bit. Like there was more like, oh, I really want to put that guy on, but we each only get 5 spots. So it is select. It is difficult. We do sort of agonize over this, but it's the best kind of agony because these, again, are our favorite players on defense in this draft to watch. If we just have to throw some tape on, feel like giggling and enjoying watching some football, these 5 for each of us are the ones that are going to provide that.
I do want to have a very brief chat, not even a chat, just a note, from the USC Pro Day, which was awesome, very well-run event, as per usual. Got to see Caleb drop 67-yard dimes down the field, saw Solomon Bird do his thing. They actually had some pretty impressive athletic testing going on with the offensive line group for USC, which, of course, I was like, okay, well, if all these freaks of nature are out there, what happened? And so we got some interesting answers about that. We were asking people around the program. You know, watch Taj and Brendan Rice and USC had a lot of dudes, right? After the pro day, got to take a few hours, sit down for dinner with Will Hewlett and the whole crew that's training Caleb right now in the pre-draft process. And they have a whole large roster of NFL quarterbacks they work with and prospects and everything like that. Brock Purdy, Anthony Richardson. And EJ, you and I have talked quite extensively about the transformation of Brock Purdy from when we saw him at the Shrine Bowl before his rookie year and then what we saw in his rookie year and how they completely retooled his mechanics. That was the group that did that. You know, they got Anthony Richardson ready for his rookie year, and now they're working with Caleb. And it was a very illuminating discussion that I had with them, both about, you know, what Caleb's working on right now, but also, you know, how he is as a quarterback, how he is, you know, off the field in terms of work ethic, leadership, everything like that. And I had already known that Caleb is just a ridiculously great prospect, and we've already talked to his teammates, and they speak glowingly about him, you know, his coaches. And this is just kind of another check mark down the list of people that are close to Caleb that we have now talked to that could not say enough good things about not just him as a player, but also him as a person. I mean, some of the stories they were telling about his work ethic are just, he's insane. Like he's like the Kobe type mentality. So
I know it sounds dumb to say that, like, defending Caleb Williams is a minority position, but I do feel like some of the takes have gotten a little out of hand. So I'm okay being the guy to defend Caleb Williams. Okay, fine. I'll be the bad guy there. But I have never been more sure after all these discussions with all these people that Caleb's going to be a superstar. Like, it's not just about the talent, folks. It's about what's between the ears. And he is special in every possible way. It's not just arm. It's not just mobility. It's work ethic. It's instinct. It's intellect. Like, he's got everything. Like, I don't know how many more people around him that I have to talk to get that through. Hopefully to Bears fans in particular. Like, this is a rare prospect, okay? Like, whatever you're hearing about the media from people that have never talked to the kid before, that have never talked to his coaches, never talked to his teammates, don't believe it, because the people that actually work with this kid love him. And I feel like those are the opinions that actually matter.
To me, the most, and you said you don't know how many more people you need to talk to. I don't need to talk to any more, because every single person I've talked to that has actually interacted with Caleb has been down the line the same, hyper positive, love, love, love this guy, this player, this teammate, this person. And it couldn't be more different from so much of what you see characterized in the media about he's this or he's that or he's demanding or he's a diva. Like, all that stuff is so very different than what everybody we've talked to have said that's actually spent time with him. So I've pretty much tossed that sort of general narrative, negative narrative out. And, you know, just watching him yesterday at the pro day. So it turns out that, you know, when they write a script for a pro day, this is the quarterback coaches and the quarterback, they are trying to choreograph it. That is a very chosen word to showcase strengths, to make everybody comfortable. It's an audition, and it's supposed to make them look as good as possible. Wrench in the monkey works yesterday. There's a hamstring pull for the wide receiver, and the script blows up like 20 minutes before they're going to run it. They've spent a month choreographing this thing. They know it's going to happen. A lot of people under the brightest lights they're going to be under until they're in the pros would go, oh God, this is terrible. And instead, Caleb goes, nope, I got it. It's cool. I'll do this. I'll throw this way. Like, we'll work it out. I got it. No problem. We'll make it work. Like, biggest stage of his life, 20 minutes beforehand, you basically throw a hand grenade in the mix and say, sorry, your plan is not going to work out the way you thought it was. And he goes, no worries. I got it. We're cool. And you could see it just rolling over to the media scrum. You've seen these media scrums. You've been in them. They are aggressive, trying to get your question answered. Everybody's chipping at you. They're trying to make content. He realizes that as a 20-whatever-year-old. And he goes, hey, these people are trying to make a living too. It's not just that they're all coming at me and being aggressive. I'm going to try and give them everything I can to make their jobs easier. I'm going to be cool and collected about it. I'm going to be calm. It's no skin off anybody's nose. Like, that is a tremendously balanced perspective for a guy in his position. And it definitely sort of backs up or speaks to all the things we've gotten from all these other sources and leads to this very clean sort of narrative of, no, this is the guy. The guy is chill. He's got it together. He's calm. He's collected. He's very intelligent. Like, this is who you want running your franchise. Like, if you want a face of the franchise, physically, capability-wise, mentally, temperament, like, this is the guy you want.
Also a huge foodie, apparently, so he's going to have a good time in Chicago.
Yeah,
he's going to have
for
a great time in Chicago.
For sure.
Great food city. Fun little story about that. Kind of, again, last minute they had to rearrange the pro day, right? Because when every receiver kind of has like certain routes that they're supposed to run at certain timing so that guys don't get gassed out by just running and running and running and running. Poor Brennan Rice had to pick up a lot of the slack. he's like, guys, I need a blow. Can we just run something else real quick? Like, let the running backs go. Like, I just ran 70 yards, right? But they had to cut like 15 throws out of the pro day. Mm-hmm. That they just in order to not completely kill their receivers, because like they're not trying to make these guys look bad either, the ones catching the ball. So it's like they can't just gas them out completely running corner posts all day, right? So they had to cut a lot out of the pro day, and they had different guys running different routes than what they had been repping the whole time. So, but, you know, they made it work, right? Because in the NFL, nothing is perfect either. In an actual game scenario, and you gotta figure that shit out.
Next man up.
So, next man up. Okay, we got through a bunch of offensive talk. Let's talk defense. That's what people are here for. It's the Defensive Gems episode, after all. Again, these are 10 players that we just really enjoy watching. They're not our highest graded. They will not be the first drafted. But, you know, at their respective rounds, at their respective valuations, whether it's first round to seventh round, these are the guys that we're going to be just pounding the table for when we get to their range. EJ, who is your first defensive gem?
We're going to stay right in the Pac-12. We're going to go with Jaden Hicks, the safety out of Washington State. Now, between him and a guy that ended up in my honorable mentions, Tyke Smith from Georgia. Again, I watched those two guys back to back. I love both of their styles. I love both of their games. But in the end, Jaden Hicks is my guy. Jaden Hicks is the guy I'm pounding the table for. He's got a little throwback to him. I feel like you could play his highlights mixed over, like Pantera, Tool, Slipknot, and it wouldn't feel out of place. And that's perfect for a safety for me. Great size, 6'2", 211. Brings it to bear when he hits. His hit versus Wisconsin over the middle is classic enforcer safety play. Like, clean hit, cleans the guy off his feet, stands over him. Like, nothing dirty about that hit, but that receiver wants no more business over the middle. He's telling his quarterback, outbreaking routes only. I'm not doing that again. That hurt like crazy. Fearless will go toe-to-toe with the biggest ball carriers out there. He smacked Braylon Allen a couple times in the Wisconsin game, just head up, one-on-one, not helping to finish a tackle, but initiating and finishing the tackle. He's that kind of player. I really appreciate that about his game. And that might make you think, oh, he's just a big downhill, like, third safety in the box thumper. Uh-uh. He is also tremendous in pass coverage. So once you get past those sledgehammer tendencies, you realize he can really run and cover at that size, too. His INT versus Penix and Polk on the slot fade in the Apple Cup was, like, textbook safety play. Hip to hip. The fact that he came down with the ball was a little bit lucky, but his positioning was not lucky at all. He was all over Jalen Polk. Jalen Polk, going to be a very highly drafted receiver in this class. Jaden Hicks with him is sort of blow for blow. Very good blitzer, generally agile, too agile for tight ends to deal with, and that's usually who you're going to end up kind of grabbing that blitzing safety off the edge. He just dances around them. He makes them look dumb. And then, of course, he's bringing all that physicality to bear on your quarterback, and you don't want that. Plays special teams, blocked field goal versus UCLA, so he's got great versatility. Very quick trigger, great eyes, goes from backpedal to sort of heat seeker mode in just an instant. Love that. You're not getting to the sideline on him. He's got wheels, like we said, he can cover, but going towards the sideline, it looks like he takes it personally. He's just like, nope, edge is not yours, edge is mine. I've got you there. And he'll let you know when he trucks you. He'll get up and talk about it. He is loud. He is aggressive. He is energetic. He is one of those fire starters on defense, agents of chaos, whatever you want to call him. I love those players. He can really set the tone for the defense. Moreover, he's just extremely impactful and active. You see play after play after play. You hear announcers saying, there goes that man again within the same game because they've seen him make all those plays. Just love Hicks's overall game, his skill set, his size, the way he brings it. One of my favorite defensive players in this entire draft.
If you didn't bring up the Wisconsin hit, I was going to. Because I was like, do not run crossing routes at Jaden Hicks, for the love of God. Okay? Mm-hmm. Like, he's not Bam Bam or Cam Chancellor, for those of you who didn't watch early to mid-2010s football yet. It's not quite Cam Chancellor, but... you know, different house, squint, same neighborhood, you know.
If you squint, it kind of looks like it on some plays. And that's the thing, is there are very few safeties, I think, that can do all of that and then will bring that physical edge, that sort of in-your-face menacing, like, They take it personally, and I appreciate that. It's like the flip side of, like, offensive linemen saying, you're not going to touch my quarterback. That's my brother. You're not getting him dirty. Like, I feel like Jaden Hicks treats yardage on the field that way. He's like, no, you can't have that yard. It's mine.
In terms of system fit, he's one of the guys where it's like, we'll just draft him and we'll figure it out, because it's like, could he be just a pure, you know, Kyle Hamilton, you know, we're keeping you within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage type safety slash nickel, big nickel hybrid? Like, yeah, he absolutely could be. In fact, that's probably at first blush what he will be doing. But that hit against Wisconsin kind of got my gears turning. It's like, okay, well, what if we are just like a really, really quarters heavy team, quarter half, where it's like the safeties are 12 to 15 yards off the ball? Like, can he survive there? And I think he can, as long as they are not playing those specific types of coverages where he has to deal with like a speed slot by himself, right? Because I don't know if he has the gas for that. But if it's like we're playing the types of coverages where he's coming forward, not going backwards, as in, hey, he's the boundary side safety, and we're having him poach the number three to the field side, so that if that number three is suicidal enough to come over the middle, like, yeah, he's going to get tagged. Otherwise, if that number three is not coming, then he's just going to be bracketing the number one, which, again, if that number one breaks inside, like, he's going to get tagged. If we're putting him in position where it's literally just you are just driving downhill from depth, then, yeah, he can work in those types of systems. Pure free safety, there's other guys in this class that I would prioritize for that. You know, probably Kalen Bullock, who, you know, again, we saw at USC Pro Day. But Bullock doesn't play the run like Hicks. He doesn't blitz like Hicks. So I think Hicks could probably go ahead of him just because he can do more, you know? Like, I think he's one of the most versatile safeties in this class because he can do more. I have no idea where he's going to get drafted. I really have no idea. But I do know I want him, and that's good enough for me.
Correct. I want him on my team. I would say he's probably going to be the second safety off the board after Bullard, most likely, or third maybe after Bullard and Newbin. I think he and Bullard are going to be like dealer's choice. I think Newbin probably goes first, and then it really is like, okay, who needs the next safety and what do you want? And if you want somebody that I really think can do it all, again, I don't necessarily want him singled up on a speed slot, but if you want him going down the field with a big slot, I think he is better than average there. He's a very, very good player. I'm just going to be a fan of his career wherever he goes because he's that kind of player. Like, I enjoy watching him play. And as long as he doesn't end up in a Packers uniform, which now, of course, I've said that he will.
Absolutely, he will.
I'm totally cool with it.
My first gem is another safety who I'm not sure where he's going to go within, like, the safety run that we expect to happen starting on day two. But he's going to be one of the first three to four drafted. And that's Dadrian Taylor-Demerson from Texas Tech. Everybody calls him Rabbit. You know, we talked to him at the Shrine Bowl. That interview should be coming up fairly soon. He's a different kind of safety. He's smaller. He's faster. Rangier. And I think if you want a safety that can cover a speed slot, it's going to be Taylor-Demerson. But also, he doesn't quite have the same size and physicality. Not like, still has the willingness, still has the want to. He's tough as shit. But, you know, hey, physics is physics, right? Like, he doesn't quite bring the same amount of weight downhill. Reminds me a lot more of like a Tyrann Mathieu type, where you can leave him in the post all day, and he's got the range to do that and be a ball hawk. Or you can have him drop down in the slot and cover wide receivers one-on-one and be sticky. We saw him cover Malik Washington one-on-one, who was one of our offensive gems, one of the best slot receivers in this class, and he stuck with him. Like, he's got great feet, great hips, great short area burst, great long speed. He's a corner that happens to also play safety, which is a very valuable skill set, because in today's, you know, in today's day and age, when you have 12 personnel that isn't really 12 personnel, right? Where it's like, we have two tight ends in the field, but one of them is basically a wide receiver, and so we're putting him outside, which means we're putting a receiver in the slot inside of a tight end. And so it's like, we're tricking you into matching with base, but you still need a guy that can bump inside and play in the slot. So that's going to have to be one of your safeties, right? Like, you can do that with Rabbit, where even if we're in base, we're not going to be completely shit out of luck if we have to put a safety in the slot to cover a receiver based on how we're handling certain looks, certain motions, certain anything, right? He just gives you that flexibility, which, again, is what Tyron did over the years, where based on motions, he might have to go from the post and then come down and line up in the slot right before the snap and then, you know, have to cover a guy one-on-one vertically down the field. I think having a safety with that kind of skill set where you're okay with, instead of following and tracking, you can just kind of rock and roll it, like that's really valuable. So I think Taylor Demerson's going to go high because of that reason, because he gives you the option to play motion and to play 12 personnel and to play all these kind of funky formations in multiple ways, not just one way. And that's a good thing for any DC to have.
It's really hard to classify his style of play because he is very good at two things. It's not that he can do two things. A lot of guys can do two things in this league, but he's very good at two things. It's kind of like if you took like Malik Hooker, for those of you that remember, like prime Malik Hooker coming out was like the ultimate rangy, fast, like deep third safety who could really cover. It's like if you took him and like mashed him up with your favorite like nasty little balled up nickel that likes to stick his face in the run and be a force player and is really effective. It's like if you glued those two together, that's Rabbit. Like he can get right up in the fit and mess things up on the line of scrimmage. Next play, he is literally 20 yards off the ball roaming the deep third as the cover cap guy, and he can get sideline to sideline and do it. And there are very few guys that have that true mix of skills. Fascinating player, very valuable, as you said, in today's NFL. I think he will get drafted probably before people think, even a little bit. He's been rising up board slowly since Shrine, but I still think he has a little bit more potential to go maybe in the 90s, right? Be off
hell,
the board,
he could even go late too. Like, I wouldn't be shocked.
He could. If people really put a premium on that value sort of dual skill set that he has, I wouldn't be stunned. Like, I'd probably be happy, depending on the fit. I'd certainly be happy for him that people recognize that level of talent. But people are still looking at him in the kind of the 115, 120, 110 range. I would not be at all surprised if he went in the, you know, mid-80s to 90s range.
Either way, day two somewhere. And he's also just such a good kid.
Yeah.
Like, such a good kid. Like, everybody who's interviewed him just lights up about him. He's going to be a fan favorite from day one. And local media is going to love him, too.
We'll get back to the show in just a second and talk more gems. But first, a quick word from a sponsor that helped make this show possible, LinkedIn. Hiring is a stressful process. Brett and I know that feeling as small business owners who are about to hire a production assistant. We know what goes into expanding your team, and it's very difficult. But LinkedIn is here to make it as easy as possible. There are more than a billion professionals on LinkedIn, and 86% of the 2.5 million small business owners that use LinkedIn report getting a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So if you're hiring, LinkedIn is the place to be. There's a lot of competition out there to try and hire the best possible candidates for your jobs, and it can be overwhelming. So if you're a small business owner like me and you need extra help in 2024 to achieve your goals, LinkedIn Jobs will help you find the candidates you want to connect with faster than ever before. Try posting your available job for free at linkedin.com/bootleg and see what they can do for you. Again, that's linkedin.com/bootleg to post your available job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Thanks again to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's show. And with that, let's get back to it.
All right. Your second gem, who you got?
I'm going with Johnny Newton, the defensive tackle from Illinois, who I feel like we've kind of forgot about. Nobody, I think, is heaping dirt on Johnny Newton, but he did have the foot injury, so he didn't test the combine. That always sort of pulls you out of the eye. Everybody was talking about him as one of, if not the best defensive players in this class. We were talking about a guy that is worthy of a top 15 pick, depending on the team, based on talent. For this year's defensive tackle draft class, I'm going to give you some numbers. Newton is first in sacks, first tied for QB hits, second in hurries, first in total pressures, third in win percentage, first in forced fumbles, had 8.5 TFLs, and was tied for third in PFF stops.
And that was while injured, by the way.
Yeah. So that's first, second, first, third, first, and third. For all the sort of performance metrics that you might look at in terms of a defensive tackle. He is a game-wrecking defensive tackle. He's a pure three tech, can step all the way across the face of a blocker in one step. That is rare sort of agility for a guy. And he can do it incredibly quickly. And he's not small either. I mean, he is three tech sized, but he's not one of these guys like, oh, he's like 275, 280. He's just liquid quick and has been for a couple of years. He's not a one season wonder. He's been doing this. He was on the radar last year. It was like, oh, when you were watching that Illinois defense last year, you're like, oh, Newton's coming. He's going to be a fun one to talk about. And he is. Closing speed is absolutely nasty. When he gets free, he accelerates, and quarterbacks kind of do that little herky jerk, oh crap, he's closer than I thought he was thing, before he mauls them. Vicious push pull move. Really, really effective. Arm over is quality too. One of my favorite things he does is catch the OL's hands, and then he just looks like Thanos. It's hilarious. They're like, and he's like, whack, now what are you going to do? And he just pitches their hands, and they're like, oh, no. And, of course, then he just fires up the closing speed. It's the funniest thing on tape. I just giggle every time he does it. Plays the run with tenacity and technique, earns the right to rush is what I wrote in my notes. He is not one of those guys that's just pinning his ears back and blasting through a gap to get any kind of possible pressure or sack. He is gap sound and technique with it. Keeps an arm free once he has position, which is really impressive for a guy of his size. You can tell he took that sort of early Lovey coaching about this is how you play the run. You're going to take half the man, you're going to keep them really on your shoulder, and then you're going to keep that other big mitt free so that running backs trying to come through there aren't going to get what they want. One of the top defenders in this entire class, no matter how you slice it, if you're looking at impact, if you're looking at defensive gap soundness, if you're looking at technique, effort, Johnny Newton checks all those boxes. And I feel like we just kind of haven't been talking about him as much because guys like Byron Murphy, who are excellent players and on my, honorable mentions list, are tremendous and great physical specimens. But Johnny Newton's been doing this for a couple of years. He did it last year on Illinois' defense, and with all the guys they got drafted last year, it's one of the most fun defenses in the entire country to watch. And he was still drawing your eyes out of that bunch of four or five guys that got drafted. It's like, oh man, look at this guy in the middle. He is really starting the fire on almost every play. Love Johnny Newton.
When you throw on his tape, and again, for people that have been doing this for a long time, you'll know what I mean. Every now and then you watch a prospect where you get these almost like just visceral flashbacks to the first time you experienced another prospect in your distant past. My first game of Johnny Newton, I got about 12 plays in, and I was like, oh God, it's Sharif Floyd. The same feelings that I had when I first watched Sharif Floyd commit war crimes every single week. That was what I felt with Johnny Newton, where it's like, you are too strong. Your hands are too quick, too tenacious, too well coached, too disciplined. Like Sharif Floyd, God, I don't think people remember that. When Sharif was coming out, he was a badass. And unfortunately, injuries cut his career short, but he's a coach now. And when he came into the league, he had the technical development of somebody who you could tell was just going to be a coach one day. It's like, that is somebody who is hardcore grinding, drilling their hands, working extremely hard to be the best possible football player. Not just the best athlete, the best possible football player. I'm telling you, I got 12, 15 snaps into Johnny Newton. I was like, oh my God, it's Sharif. It's the same feeling. And I really do think Sharif would have been an unbelievable player across his generation if he could stay healthy. He's one of the one that got away, for me.
Yep.
And I think Johnny is that. Ironically, also dealing with an injury right now, which is why we don't have testing numbers for him. But I know if he tested, he would have had pretty outrageous numbers. He's an easy slam dunk first round pick. I don't know if he's going to be the first defensive tackle taken, because I know Byron Murphy is also extremely highly regarded, and for good reason. I think they're different. They're different types of guys. I would play them differently. So it really just depends on like the flavor you want. But let me put it to you this way. If the Bears trade down from 9 because Rome's gone, I'm just penciling in Johnny. Like, I understand they've already taken other defensive tackles recently. I really like Dex. I want Johnny next to Javon. Like, I really do.
That would be a very fun combination. Not going to confirm or deny if I've thought of that potential pairing. It would be really cool, and the Bears have been seeking actively a 3-tech like Newton literally since this regime took over. Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus's first move was to try and sign Larry Ogunjobi to a free agency contract. Failed medicals, ended up going to Pittsburgh, and they've kind of just been going on plan B or C since. They drafted a couple last year. One of them, I think, worked out really well. The other one, hey, you know, he's only 1 year into his career. I'm not going to throw dirt on him yet. Like, he can still develop, and I hope he has a great sophomore season. But that is not a reason not to draft Johnny Newton. Again, if you trade down and he is there, if somebody else took, say, Byron Murphy first, and you trade down into the late teens or something, and Johnny Newton's still staring you in the face, and you're comfortable with his medicals, put him on your line, have him wreak havoc, him, Montez Sweat, Javon, and whoever else you want to put at the other
edge.
Well,
that's the thing, is like, you're not putting Billings on all your third down. Like, you still need a guy to come in on third down, because you're not just going to have Billings be in there in third and 10 just because. And I love Billings. Billings is awesome.
He's great.
But like, you still need to bring somebody else in. So why not have Newton and Dexter and Sweat and insert other pass rusher that they draft here? Like, good God. If Caleb
gets
a lead,
yeah,
it's over. No,
at that point, it would be a very fun pass rushing unit to be looking at. But any down that I think Johnny Newton's in for is going to be very quickly, I think, must-see TV. He is going to be a problem you are going to have to deal with. And if you're going to draft a defender in the first round, especially an interior defender, they need to bring that piece. They have to have that pass rush ability. That's what pushes them up into that range. And Newton does, like, in gobs. He's like, that is all over his tape.
Now, my second gem is also an interior defensive lineman, a little bit more of a narrow cone in terms of the role that I think he's going to play in the NFL. It's more of like a Kalijah Kancey type, where, again, we are bringing you in on third down early in your career. And that's Mekhi Wingo. He's smaller than Newton. He's 6 foot, 285. Again, that's becoming more common among interior defensive linemen. But even though he's not big and he is not long, he is explosive and fluid, which is why the Kalijah Kancey comparison is going to get thrown around a lot for him. If you're looking at just his 10-yard split at 164, that is in the 95th percentile for every single defensive tackle going back to like 1997. Like, that is an absurd first step. And I had not watched him before the combine. I didn't get to the LSU DTs yet.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there. I was watching all these guys go through drills. And again, it's Byron Murphy's going through it. Braden Fisk, who we'll get to in a little bit. You know, Tavondre's not that kind of guy. But, like, you get to watch all the interior, you know, Chris Jenkins, all of them. Mm-hmm. They're going through it one after another. And you get to, like, just see and compare. Every time Mekhi Wingo went through a drill, I was like, holy shit. Like, that is a different kind of burst and bend. Honestly, he was more impressive in the drills than even Byron Murphy, and that's saying a lot. He is so quick, so fluid, so dangerous as a pass rusher. He didn't get as many reps at it as some of the other top interior pass rushers in this class, because they kind of had a rotation going on at LSU. And also, side note, by the way, Mason Smith. Whew, baby, if you need a 5-tech, draft Mason Smith. He's not on my list, but he's an honorable mention.
Different kind of wrecker, but still a wrecker.
Way different. Yeah. But like Mekhi, when he would get like true 3rd and 7+ opportunities, and not only that, but true third and seven plus opportunities with a single. Oh, it was over. Like, he is so, so bursty, so twitchy. I love how he times his hands. again, I think Kalijah Kancey's superpower, because he's not very big, his superpower was the ability to neutralize a punch before it made contact.
Mm-hmm.
Makai Wingo has that too. And if you can't get your hand on somebody who has a 1-6-4 10-yard split, like, you just lose anyway. And I think his hands are so, so well drilled for that particular type of play style. He's not a power rusher. He's not going to run through you. But again, for a third down specialist that's going to get drafted somewhere in, on day two, specifically for that skill set, I'm more than willing to pay that price, because it is hard to find interior pass rushers. This class happens to have quite a few of them, but I think he is easily among the best, and you don't have to spend a first-round pick on him, because like probably three or four defense tackles are going to go ahead of him.
Which is rare. And you said narrow cone, and I'm going to go to like very narrow cone. I'm going to take your narrow cone, and I'm going to compress it down and make it into a needle. And just think about a needle popping a balloon, right? Again, he's going to drive through a narrow gap. He's going to do it very quickly and with force. And if you don't get your hands on him, he's just going to continue at that pace to your quarterback. And it is a hard skill set to find. And it's even harder, as you said, down the board, where you don't have to spend a premium pick on it, because everybody wants interior pass rush. It is the quickest line to the quarterback. It is the fastest pass rush, if you will, the thing you can disrupt a play with most quickly in the NFL. So it is a, you know, very valued skill set. He has it. He just happens to not have some of the metrics that like make him climb up everybody's board into the sort of perfect performance circle that's all green. Somebody's still going to take a chance on him. I think they're going to be very happy that they did.
Yeah, he had 239 pass rush reps this year, which if you're averaging that out over the course of an entire season, well, I'm doing quick math here. They played, what, like 12 games? So that's 19 total pass rush snaps per game on average. And how many of those you're getting like true single teams? Probably half. So you're getting less than 10 real pass rush opportunities per game. Like, and he's still as productive as he was with an 8% pressure rate, which again, for a for an interior defensive lineman, like, we'll take 8% for sure. You know, sure. I don't know, I really like, again, he's a narrow role player, but this is not about highest drafted, and it's not about highest grade. Mason Smith's gonna end up with a higher grade for me just because of what he can be as a five technique. But he's fucking fun to watch, and I'll take that.
No, he's amazing. I like it. Moving on. My next gem, again, a guy that can just wreck things, and I think that's the theme we've got so far on defense, is all of these guys in their own way can really just sort of put the pin in the balloon and screw up what you're trying to do on offense. Peyton Wilson, the inside linebacker from NC State, is a guy that can make plays all over the field. He starts right in the middle. He is a true inside linebacker. Sometimes they use him as a rushing edge. He's a captain. He is huge for a linebacker, especially these days. Hyperactive, can really fly, hit 23 miles an hour on GPS in a game in pads, although does wear some of the smallest pads I've ever seen. He wears like punter pads, a half shirt, and like track shorts. He seems to have an inherent dislike of like clothing.
Dude, but if I look like that, I would never wear a shirt. Are you kidding me?
Plays like Tarzan, looks like Tarzan.
Him? Yeah. He's chiseled out of granite.
Absolutely. Also a very good tackler. You might think somebody going that fast that plays that wild, you know, was not a good tackler. No, he missed less than 5% of his attempts. If he gets to you, you are going to end up on the ground. Absolute missile. His trigger is wild. Watch the Virginia sack if you want to see that. Routinely runs down running backs from behind and makes it look easy. This is like, you know, cheetah catching the slowest gazelle kind of thing, and it happens all the time. He's so fast that he'll overrun a few plays. He gets there so quickly that he's like there waiting for the play to come to him, and they turn up. They're like, oh, there's not supposed to be a linebacker there, but Peyton's like, I got here first. That's just kind of his game. Beats blocks with speed routinely. He's just by them before they're set. They know what they're supposed to do. They see him. They understand that he is their responsibility, and they reach out. They're like, he's already by him because he can get skinny, gets fast, way too athletic for tight ends. We said that earlier about Jaden Hicks. Like, it's embarrassing. Look at the fourth quarter Louisville sack or the fourth quarter UNC sack. Both of those were tight ends squared up basically one-on-one with Wilson. Wilson was like, really? You're going to play me like this? All right. Like, that's your choice. But This is what's going to happen. Plays special teams, which is rare for, again, a captain and a leader of the defense. Ran a fake punt versus Louisville. He too, like Jaden Hicks, we're developing a theme here. A little bit mouthy, he's going to tell you. When he drives you into your own sideline, he's going to make sure you hear about it, and probably that your teammates do too. Always around the football, sort of just makes his own luck. He is always in the mix, much like Jaden Hicks, because he uses that speed, because he's active, he's always flying to the ball. Coaches love that, and because of that, he's there to clean up, you know, fumbles that other people forced. He's there to grab folks when they break an ankle tackle and just obliterate them. He is just omnipresent on the football field, and as a defensive player, I love that. So he can make plays down the field. He can stay with your slot receiver. He's that fast. Like, we're talking about 23 here. That's Tyreek fast. Like, he can run with anybody on the football field. He goes to either edge. Occasionally they blitz him. It's just, you're never safe from this guy, and I love that about a defensive player. Now, the downside, injuries. We didn't get to see his medicals. Most people said his medicals came out clean, that he came out with a cleanish bill of health from the combine, which is very good news for his stock. If so, I think there's no way he's not inside linebacker one in this draft. Injuries are what would keep him down, but nothing about his on-field play, testing, physical skills, mental acumen would keep him out of that spot.
I think his best spot is probably as a will linebacker, an outside linebacker, something where it's, hey, we are lining up no more inside than probably like a 30, which in coach speak, linebacker alignments, like, you know, you hear like three technique, mm-hmm. five technique, something like that. Linebacker alignments, they just use double numbers. So like a 30 alignment is basically outside shoulder of the guard, but obviously off the ball. 40, 50, blah, 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 right? I don't know if I'd want him to bang around in the A-gap. I don't know if he's built for that. And I also don't think it really takes advantage of his best quality, which is speed. Like, he is a human railgun. So, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I want him as an outside off-ball linebacker, a will linebacker. If we're just living in nickel all day, like, he'll be... Well, it kind of depends on the personnel grouping if we're in nickel. But not to get too deep into the weeds, if we're going against a trips look, I would want him on the passing strength, because passing strength inside linebackers from nickel are going to have a lot more responsibilities to handle receivers down the field, which obviously a linebacker that runs 4-4-3, you want that for him. But if we're in a base look, or if we're in nickel against 2x2, I want him away from the tight end, on the weak side, because I want him just running shit down from behind. Does all this make sense? Am I speaking English? Hopefully I am.
You are to me. I don't know. I think most people can follow that. And the bottom line is, you want this guy on the field. You do want him aligned properly. He can get through all the trash, but if you can keep him away from it, he's just going to get there faster. And
yeah,
that's
I want him being what Isaiah Simmons was supposed to be. That's what I'm trying to say. A space yep. player, a space player. Against trips, we line him up to the trip side so that he has opportunities to show off his range and coverage ability. Against 2x2, we want him on the weak side so that he can run shit down from behind. Like, that is what I want for him. If you have a linebacker that's 230 and runs low 4.4, fucking use it. Like, we don't need him stacking on guards and banging around inside the A-gaps. Like, we don't need him to do that. So why make him do that? Let him run. So I think that's his role in the NFL, and he'd be pretty darn good at it. And I have no idea who's going to take the first linebacker in this class.
Yeah, I don't think it's a first-round pick. I think first linebacker chosen is not in the first round. If it is, it is in the last, like, two picks, but I really don't think that's going to happen. I think he will be an early day two pick for, again, the first team that has a need and looks at that versatility and goes, man, I really don't ever have to take this guy off the field, even special teams. Like, I could just play him every down if I wanted to, because on every down there's something that he can do well for me.
You consume way too much NFL draft content, agonize over pro day times and weigh in results. You dominate your friends, family, and coworkers in fantasy football. If so, might be time to put all that knowledge to good use. You can draft all your favorite NFL prospects right now on Underdog Fantasy Rookie Best Ball. Rookie Best Ball is already live, and you can get your favorite players before they even enter the league. If you believe in their talent, use all that knowledge you've gained and snag them early before your friends do. At this time last year, NFL rookie stars Sam Laporta and bootleg favorite Puka Nacua weren't even being drafted. Even if you love players at the top of the board, get ahead of the curve and select the players you think will be this year's stars right now. To draft all your favorite future NFL stars, use promo code BOOTLEG right now and Underdog will match your initial deposit up to $100. So whatever you put in, they'll put in. And you can use that money for Rookie Best Ball, NBA Pick'ems, or any of the other games available on Underdog Fantasy. We want to thank Underdog for sponsoring not just this show, but all of our content leading up to the NFL draft, and there's a lot more of that coming, so buckle up. Thanks again to Underdog, and with that, let's get back to it.
Yeah, I would imagine that once the first linebacker goes, we're going to see the next two go fairly quickly. Whether it's Edgerrin Cooper being the first, or Peyton Wilson, or my next gem, because I also chose my own inside linebacker. Very different type than Peyton Wilson. So again, I'm not sure who's going first here because different teams want different types of linebackers for what they need. Junior Colson from Michigan, my number three gem. He is 6'2", 240, just built like a tree stump, but he doesn't move like a tree stump. Well, I guess tree stumps can't move, but you know what I mean. Like, he's got really, really, really good movement skills for somebody who is built so densely. Like, he is dense, like just huge, gigantic quads. Like, I don't know what he squats because we don't have any testing numbers or anything from him. Pro day's not for like another week, so I don't know if we are going to get any numbers for him. But like, you can tell he never misses leg day. Like, he is thick. And he uses that density, I guess I guess we could say. He uses it to just be an ass kicker against the run. Like, as far as stack and shed linebackers, he's the best one in this class. I think he takes on contact and discards contact better than Edgerrin Cooper, better than Peyton Wilson. Does he have the speed of both of those guys? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But if you need like an early career Nick Bolton, before Nick Bolton kind of developed all of his coverage skills that he has now. But an early career Nick Bolton of like a true Mike linebacker that is just going to rumble. Like 30 snaps a game, he's looking at the center, he's like, you and me, buddy, we're going to the mud today. Like, that's Junior Colson, right? And I love those kind of linebackers because they're harder to find now. Like, he might be the only one in this class. But if you need that, you really, really need it, especially as interior defensive lines are getting lighter. You know, we talk about Mekhi Wingo being 285. Well, we got guys coming out at 278, 280. Like, that's more and more common these days. So you kind of need to still have weight in your front seven somewhere. It's got to be in the linebacking core if you have a lighter front. So he's going to get picked up by some team that just needs a bouncer, honestly, like some team that just needs somebody who's going to fight all day long and stop the run and like contribute as a coverage defender, but that's really not his thing. But I love Junior Colson. Like, if you need every run play within like 10 yards of the offensive line to die, this is your guy.
I mean, look, Denzel Perryman is still in the league, just got signed again. Like, there is a need for guys like this. And this was Denzel Perryman in college. He was a fearsome force going forward, blasting into the A and B gap and saying, mine, you're going to earn it every time. Taking on lead blockers, you know, taking on backs when they came through single gaps, just hunting the A and B gaps and making sure that it was very, very difficult terrain to get through. Junior Colson is that guy. Again, just drawing the comparison, I would not be at all surprised if he ended up playing for the Chargers because, you know, his former head coach knows exactly what he is and can use that kind of toughness, has built pretty much every team he's coached, pro or college, in that mold. They have had guys. There's a reason Junior Colson was at Michigan. It is very much in that mold, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him go there, but there are other teams that need it as well because, again, if you've got your, you know, heavy safety type, your dimebacker that's coming down and playing on third down, whatever else, like, that's not the guy you roll out there on you know, second and short, right?
Yeah.
Second and three, and this team's not prone to take shots on second and short. They just want the first down. Like, you need your Junior Colsons of the world to be out there and be like, okay, earn it. Like, you might get it, but it's not going to be easy. We're not going to make it easy for you, and that's Colson's role. And, you know, it's fun to watch those guys. And like you said, they are more rare. I think more linebackers understand that for a sort of long career or more varied career, again, the more you can do in the NFL, it's better if you can run and cover. But there are those throwbacks that are like, yeah, but you still need us, right? And Colson's one of those.
You still got to play against the Niners. Yeah. And then who are you going to go to?
Yeah.
You got to deal with Kyle Shanahan in January, buddy. That's my time.
That's right. That's right. I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Cowboys threw out linebackers that weighed 205 last year against Aaron Jones. How'd that go? Just saying.
Oops.
Just saying. All right. Gem number four. Who you got?
Got to go Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback for Toledo. Liked this guy preseason. Liked him throughout the season. Am loving him in draft season. And he is a big corner, 6 foot, 195, who can really run 1.5, 110 yard split, 4.3, 3.40, which honestly, it was faster than I expected. I expected him to be in the mid 4.4s on tape because he is plenty fast at that size. He was real fast, but bigger than that, bigger than the size, bigger than the speed, he is physical. And this is catnip. If you followed my work, you know that big corners that can hit are my thing, and he can hit and cover. Absolutely believes if the ball's in the air, that it is his, not yours. And he plays that way. He is going to have to learn the fine line of NFL officiating because he's not backing off. He's gonna have to figure out how he can assault you on Sundays like he assaulted you on Saturdays and not get a flag. But he is going to make it incredibly difficult, and he can because he is very skilled. It's not just a big, fast guy. He is a very good coverage guy. So if you're bold enough to try and make a play on it, he's going to punish you for it. And if you actually manage to catch it, he's going to plant you. He's going to take it personally and just take it out on you. And I love that about him. Change of direction. Excellent for a player of his size. Really fluid hips. Can really move that frame around. Use the length he's got. His hands are not top shelf. He's going to get the PBU. He's probably not going to get the INT. And some teams are going to be comfortable with that. You know, this good old Chris Berman, just knock it down. And some people are not going to be as comfortable with that. But in general, if you're looking at a corner with his size, his physical skills, his tenacity, I think most people will be like, it's okay if he doesn't turn them all into interceptions. We'd like to have him spend some time with the jugs machine, but it's not going to keep us from him being one of the top corners on our board. Awesome overall player. Yeah, they're just bait for me. Guys that are sticky in coverage will easily drop that coverage and go, you know, plant somebody on outside zone. Just hit in the run game. Sign me up. Quinyon Mitchell's got everything I love in a corner. Probably going to end up as my QB1 in this class. And again, if we're just talking about the definition of a gem,
QB1. Oh, he's coming for Caleb's job.
CB. God, I was on a podcast this morning and I kept wanting to say UFC instead of USC. It was so hard. I was like, I'm just going to have to start saying Southern Cal. Anyways, no, Quinyon Mitchell is going to be about top corner in this class, most likely. And just throw on the tape and start giggling. Watch him just abuse receivers and be like, you know, I know the rules are tilted for offense, but guys like Quinyon are just like double middle fingers. Like, I don't care. I played corner for a reason. I like this side of the ball. Bring it.
Yeah, he was one of the guys where I wish they let me bring popcorn down to the field in the combine because I would have just been popping at my mouth every time he was going through drills. You know, that size, that fluidity, that speed. I mean, physical profile wise, what more do you want? Like, he's got everything, right? The one question that people had was like, okay, well, played at Toledo. What happens if he goes up against NFL caliber receivers all the time, right? And then he goes to Senior Bowl and dominates. Like, he was arguably the best defensive player all of Senior Bowl week. You know, he and Roman Wilson were going at it. For me personally, I think he got the best of Roman Wilson. No shade to Roman. Great receiver in his own right. But, like, Quinyon's that guy, and he doesn't like to lose. He doesn't let it get in his head when he loses. Like, he will come back, and it, like, he's got a short memory, but he does hold grudges. So again, he's extremely feisty, extremely competitive. Yeah. You know, another scouting term that I love for corners like him. He's got hands like a snake. I agree with you. Not the best, not the best. But you know, if he could catch, he'd probably play receiver. So yeah, he's a DB. He'll contest you at the catch point. Probably won't come down with it himself, but he's not going to let you catch it either. He is a slam dunk first round pick. Probably a slam dunk top 20 pick. Yeah. I don't, you know, I was trying to like figure out like who's going to take the first corner, like who really, really, like desperately needs a corner, like in the top 20. And I Colts probably because the Legarius Sneed thing fell through. That's probably where it starts for Quinyon. But it's kind of an odd. It's kind of an odd year for the top corners because, like, clearly corner's an important position. It's a premium position. Everybody needs corners. But everybody that's picking in the first half of the draft just needs other stuff a lot more other than probably Indy, right? So it's going to be interesting how there's going to be, like, the top four corners probably all available in the back half of the first round. And then once one goes, they're all going to go. Quinyon's probably going to be the first one, either him or Terrion Arnold.
Yep.
You know, one of those two. I'm actually fascinated to see what the Chargers do because I don't know if, like, obviously the Chargers will take a corner in the first two rounds in this draft. They kind of have to. I don't know if they're going to do it at five, but if they trade down, potentially in business for Quinyon at like 11. So yeah. Keep an eye out for that too. For sure. My fourth gem, also a corner in this class. We're just kind of mirroring each other here.
We are. Well, corners, mirror, it's perfect.
Of course, of course. If you miss out on Quinyon, which 31 teams will, if you miss out on Terrion Arnold, if you miss out on Kool-Aid McKinstry, if you miss out on any of the top five corners, fear not. Because there is a nearly 6'4", 200-pound, ass-kicker, vigilante justice-type corner up in the Pacific Northwest that's going to be available somewhere on day two. He's got almost 33-inch arms. He vert jumped 36.5, 11.1 in the broad, 4.5 flat speed. Fine, we can live with it. I don't need him to run with everybody. I need him to just beat the shit out of him at the line of scrimmage, and that's what he's going to do. He's also going to tackle well against the run, and if you dare target him, he is going to play the catch point better than everybody in this class not named Quinyon Mitchell. That is Kyree Jackson from Oregon. I adore Kyree Jackson. He is very much a throwback big press corner. I say throwback. Early 2010s is throwback now, but
it is at this point.
Like he Seattle doesn't need him, but oh god, he is so Seattle. Like he's the type of corner that they've loved for so long. But like if Pete Carroll was still in the league, he'd sprint to the podium to draft Kyree Jackson because he is big, he is long, he is physical, he is linearly explosive, he has enough speed. The makeup speed is really high. Like when the ball's in the air, he just finds that extra gear. I'm not going to compare him to Richard Sherman because Richard Sherman had like unreal special ball skills, and like I feel like comparing anybody to a first ballot Hall of Famer is setting him up to kind of have ridiculous expectations, especially for a guy that's going to go on day two. But stylistically, body type wise, I get it. Like, I'm not going to be the one to do it, but if you did it, I would understand it. Like, he's
like, go ahead, feel free. I love Kyree Jackson. I watched some extra tape of him before the night in between Oregon State and Oregon. I was down in Oregon staying with friends, and I was doing it late after they'd gone to bed. I was trying not to giggle. Like, I was trying not to just, I was like, because he's just draping on guys, and I don't care about the speed at all because he's that tall and that long, and he knows how to use that length. And if you do the physics, right, if you figure out how close he has to be to play very similarly to a corner that is, you know, 4 inches shorter, has arms that are 3 inches shorter, he can be an extra half step behind and still have just as much coverage of that receiver, and does. He knows how to use that length, and he uses it aggressively. in terms of PBU, like, it is really hard to get a ball by him. He is like a very active fence, and he is just going to wall off your receiver. You can't really throw around him. He's too tall, too long, can jump too high, and he is good in coverage. He is always in phase. If maybe a half step back, again, I don't care about that because of the size, the length, jumping ability. He is very effective, and he can reduce, especially smaller receivers. He just basically blots them out. If you're a quarterback looking for a window to try and get that ball by him, you're like, what am I supposed to do here? I can't throw it so it comes down like a mortar exactly vertically. And anytime I try and throw it horizontally, he's just in the way. He's all over the place. He knows where to be. He understands those angles, plays it very well. His body positioning is very good. And yeah, he likes to hit. He's a little spindly looking in person, but he is not shy about contact, and love him. He's going to go down the board, and he's one of the corners in this draft that I feel like most sure is going to outplay his draft stock.
Yeah, if the Chiefs lose Snead through trade or whatever, like, is he not the most Spagnuolo corner in this whole class? Yeah,
they would love him. He absolutely fits their profile. I think he fits their mental profile as well, in terms of the way they want their corners to think about how they play defense. And I was familiar with Kyrie Jackson, but I hadn't done my full workup until the night before I went to the Oregon Pro Day, and I was like, I spent a little extra time watching him at the Pro Day because I was like, man, not enough people are talking about you. Like, you're just kind of hanging out up here in the Northwest, flying just that little bit under the radar. And like, when people get to your tape, they're like, holy crap, why are more people not talking about Kyrie Jackson? It's exactly the way I felt.
Similar under the radar-ness was going on for your fifth gem until we got to the combine. And then everybody was like, you know, Braden Fisk, pretty good football player.
I was doing my top 100 watch, which is really about 125 because you don't know where the top 100 is going to come out. So you got to sort of overshoot it a little bit as we were getting ready to go to Indy this year. I got to Braden Fisk in the sort of just because of I was going offense to defense in terms of positional, you know, lineup and in the way that I watched him. I got to Braden Fisk somewhere about 85, and I was like, whoa, okay, not enough people are talking about this guy. He is a top fuel dragster with sledgehammer arms. He is not the biggest, he is not the tallest, he is not the longest, but he has a wildly quick first step. Definitely a three tech, true penetrator. If you want to see that, like, watch the Louisville game. You don't have to watch far. It's literally the opening play. He gets a TFL. Absolutely just blows through the line, like, but it almost seems like he jumped the snap. You go back, he didn't, but he moves before everybody. He moves before any of his defensive linemates move. He moves before even the center's moving. Like, nobody moves before him. He is behind the line basically as the snap is, and just obliterates the running back, and everybody on Louisville is like, what are we doing here? Like, who's that guy? Very good change of direction, super active hands, constantly working. If the first thing doesn't work, he's one of those guys that's just going to continue to throw handwork at you until he can sort of see the play behind you develop and get around you one way or another, which he will do. He's a rush tactician. He doesn't rush the same way all the time. He understands when to engage and even more so when to sort of bait and not engage so that you will lean or commit your hands or do whatever else, and then he can counter it effectively, which is extremely fun to watch in a young rusher. Effective as a four-man surface DE. He's got positional flexibility. He's absolutely quick enough that you can play him outside. He's got good enough leverage that he can set the edge. We talked about what he can do inside. He's faster than those guards and centers. He's so much fun to watch because the more you watch him, the more you think, oh, he could do this. He could do this. He could do this. And it's not all of a sudden just that super narrow envelope of like, oh, three tech penetrator, he's fast. It's like, oh, but he plays with leverage. He's got good hands. He can play inside. He can play outside. He's smart enough to play against, you know, plays that are designed to develop against him. Love him as a defender. Think he's wildly underrated till he got to the combine. And everybody went, whoa, numbers. Now they're going back to the tape and going, oh, numbers, and he's a really good football player.
He's going to be one of the highest drafted interior defensive linemen in this class. I would say up there, again, I don't know if it'll be like immediately after Murphy and Newton, but it'll be close. Like, it'll be ahead of Wingo. It'll be ahead of Mason Smith, I bet.
You know what's funny is when I was doing that top 100 watch pre-combine, which is now like 5 weeks ago, he was in like the, depending on the board you looked at, like the 140 to 125 range, maybe above 120, but not on most boards. Like, that was a very common position for him. Post-combine, just the numbers jump, he went up to like 110. Like 90 on some boards. That was sort of the extreme jump for numbers. Now that people have gotten into his tape, he's in the 40s on a bunch of boards.
Yeah.
He's in like 45 range. We're talking about full round and a half to two round jump for Fisk, because people are now starting to figure out, oh, like, he's not just an undersized penetrating three tech. He's an undersized penetrating three
tech. He's not even
tech.
Undersized at all. He's 6'3", 290. Like, he's got size.
He came in with weight. He played a little bit lighter than that this year at Florida State. But, yes, his measurables jumped him up. And then people are going back to the tape, and they're seeing all this capability. And that's the type of rise you're seeing. And he did it against quality talent. This is not some guy that played at North Carolina Ag and Tech, right? Played at Florida State. And he was whipping guys in the ACC left and right multiple times a game. And you see that and you go, oh, okay, that'll work. That'll play on Sunday.
I was a little bit surprised at where he was on the consensus boards back in late January or so around Senior Bowl week, right? Because I had assumed that a similar thing happened for other people that happened for me, which is when you sit down and you start watching guys. So you come up with the consensus list and you're like, okay, let me just start with the top guys, so I'd have a reference point for everybody after that. Jared Verse is obviously one of the first guys you watch, right?
Yep.
And I had assumed that everybody else had a similar experience to me, which is you watch Jared Verse and then you say, hold on, who the fuck is that?
Because he's right? Messing crap up. Yeah.
Right. So I was a little bit surprised at where his consensus ranking was. I was like, am I wrong?
You're just waiting at that point. I said the same thing. I was like, just wait. Just wait. Goes to the combine. You didn't have to wait long. And now it's sort of even jumped up ahead of where I thought it maybe would level out, which was like the 75-ish range, 60 to 75. I thought that was probably where he might. And like, he's well above that now. He's solidly in the 50s. And some boards, he's on the 40s. Like, that is a top of the second round player.
The one thing is like, oh, he's got 31-inch arms, but you can't really tell based on how he plays, right? Because his punch is so quick, his placement's so accurate. Like, he still gets into your chest. Now, he's not going to be able to lock you out like Mason Smith at 35-inch arms, but like, he's so violent on that initial strike.
That's not the way he plays, though. That's the thing, is like, he is all about quickness, and if that move doesn't work, throwing another move just as quickly and like move after move after move until something unlocks and then he's by you. Like, he is not one of those players that just wants to stand up and hold you. He will do that when he's holding a gap, but you literally see him like lock his back out and push his little legs out and just be like, nope, and then whip you aside. But that's not what he wants to do. He wants to be constantly working and being active and being faster than you, both with his hands and with his feet. So I'm with you that I'm not so worried about the arm length. The only other limitation I have for him is he does top out. Like, his burst in the short area, 10 to 20 yards, but when he's chasing some of those quarterbacks out to the edge and they can really run, like, he kind of flattens out in pursuit. Like, he can't quite hit that extra gear. He doesn't have it. So I want him, again, a little bit, like you said, probably from about 5 in that condensed area where all that speed, all that quickness really comes into bear, and he doesn't have to leg it out for 20 or 25 yards because he's not great there. So put him where he's great.
Well, if your defensive linemen are running 25 yards, you got bigger problems. You know?
I understand. So
it's like, hey, man, as long as he's got a 1-6-7 10-yard split, good enough for me.
If put him where he can use it.
Yeah, we're fine. We're fine. He's awesome. I love him. All right. My fifth gem, my last gem. A little bit of a deep cut. Full disclosure, by the way, I didn't want, other than Rabbit, because Rabbit's like special to me, I didn't want to throw in any gems today that we had already talked about extensively on the pod, which is why you're getting a bunch of new names today. And I if I didn't have that rule, this would have been Mo Camara, because you guys know how much I love Mo. He's going to be an honorable mention. But I had to find somebody else not named Mo Camara to talk about that's in a similar kind of range and, of course, same position, because I wanted to hit at least one of these edge rushers. Again, if we're going off gem rules of just who is so fun to watch that you love throwing on the highlights before bed, Javon Solomon from Troy. Again, not everybody has access to Troy tape. I promise you, this kid is a flamethrower off the edge, okay? Reminds me a lot of James Houston when he was coming out. Again, similar kind of size profile, ultra bursty. I think he had a 37-inch vert. Extremely fluid, outrageous bend. Also, very long arms for his frame. He's pushing 34-inch arms, or close to 30. I think it's 33.75.
Also something he has in common with Houston.
Exactly, right? And yeah. Houston came in, he put up like 8.5 sacks as a rookie, right? Because, yes, he's a very narrow role player, but if that very narrow role is get me 8.5 sacks, guess what? You have a job in the NFL for a long time. Yannick Ngakoue played forever just doing that one thing, right? And Javon Solomon can do that one thing. His first step is great. The target area that a tackle has to hit on him is so small. Again, a 6 foot flat edge rusher that can get that low, still be able to crank his hips around the corner while having a tackle leaning on that shoulder. Like, if we're just talking about burst and bend combinations here, he's among the top guys in this class and has the advantage of being shorter, which tackles hate. Tackles despise drafting or blocking guys that height. He's even shorter than Mo, and Mo's not tall. Yeah. Like, I think Mo's got more power. Mo's got heavier hands. Mo has early down versatility that I don't think Solomon has. But as pass rushers, just pure pass rushers, they're pretty close. And I think Solomon's got a chance to be like a fourth round pick. Like, again, the Josh Uches of the world play for a while because they have that skill set. He's going to play for a while because he can do this. One of the best pure edge rush. I think he had like a 19% pass rush win rate, which as an edge rusher is really high. Like, I understand he played at Troy, but like anytime he's gone up against top competition, he smoked them too. So I don't know. I'm really not worried about that. I think he's going to be a role player from day one. That's going to get on the field from day one because he brings just that burst and bend around the edge. And for a fourth round pick, that's what we're just trying to get. We're just trying to get guys that can get snaps, and he's going to get snaps.
Yeah, pass rush specialist is I feel like pass rush specialist is almost like the way we talked about nickel 3 or 4 years ago. Is like, hey, it's not really an optional position anymore. There are guys that have just that role, and you're going to draft them because they're good at that role and only because they're good at that role. It's not like, oh, well, he's a safety and he didn't work out, so I'm going to convert him to nickel. Or, oh, he was a, you know, outside linebacker and he didn't really work out, so I guess I'll just throw him in there on third down. No, these are specialized players that have a big impact because they create explosive plays for the defense. And it might sound like faint praise by saying, oh, you know, only 8 or 9 sacks. Very few guys truly get double-digit sacks. There's a lot of guys in the league make a very good living getting between 6 and 9 sacks. That is, it's somebody you need on your team. And if you can use a mid-round draft pick and come away with the potential to get that, absolutely valuable.
He had 16 sacks, by the way, in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 16 sacks in 14 games. So, again, outrageously productive. He played against Kansas State. Western Kentucky. You know, he played against good teams. Again, it was guys, like, again, teams again people see Troy. Sure. People see Troy and they're like, oh, they played against nobody. It's like, that's not nobody. No. And he beat all of them consistently. So, I don't know. I really, really like Javon Solomon. Again, another one of those guys that at the combine, you're watching all these guys go through drills back to back to back. And it's like, he's bendier than him, he's bendier than him, he's bendier than him, and all these guys are going to go with first, second, third round. I'm like, shit, like Javon Solomon, like, that's a dude. I don't know how he was at Troy in the NIL and transfer era. Like, I don't know how nobody grabbed him, but yeah, he's going to go earlier than people think. What's your honorable mentions before we get out of here?
Honorable mentions, I'll roll through them. We've already talked about a bunch of them. Byron Murphy from Texas, obviously, going to go very high. Great, fun player to watch with, and a player I don't think is near his ceiling yet, and that's super fun. Tyke Smith was really the last one I knocked off this list. Philly area kid that plays like it, absolute chip on his shoulder, missile, true nickel, and extremely good at that role. A lot of people have him labeled as a safety. He really is a true nickel if you look at his alignment. Will make plays forward and back. Great, great player. Dallas Turner, sort of edge rusher, athletic phenom, again, from Alabama, that I don't think is anywhere near his ceiling. And if he ends up with the right coach, could end up being the best edge rusher out of this class. Austin Booker, extremely long and athletic edge rusher from Kansas, who just has some wild pass rush wins on tape, needs to fill out a little bit and needs to refine his game. But like what's there right now is electric and exciting. Cam Kitchens is a big safety out of Miami. Love his game, actually going both ways, forward and back. Christian Boyd, who we talked about a lot out of Shrine Bowl. And then a couple of linebackers, because I feel like this inside linebacker class has been much maligned. Cedar Gray from UNC, who's probably going to go in about the 120s or 130s, but I love his all-around game. And then Trevin Wallace from Kentucky, who's going to go way down the board, might not even get drafted, but is just an electric athlete. And I feel like is a guy that could grow into a role, could absolutely start on special teams, be a practice squad guy. One of those guys that when he gets on the field, even in a limited role, is going to show you that wild athleticism and playmaking. Yes, does not have an all-around game, but that's why he's going to be available somewhere in the 200s or possibly even as a UDFA.
Trevin, he runs like a T-1000 from Terminator 2, just fucking... He just looks like he's in hunt mode constantly. It's like,
he is in hunt mode constantly, which is why I love him and why he made this list.
My honorable mentions, had to get Jared Verse in there. You know, I've talked about him a lot, and who goes first between him and Dallas Turner, I don't know, but I also don't particularly care because I think they're both going to be good. They're different types of players. They're going to play in different spots, in my opinion. I think Verse is more of a hand in the dirt guy. Dallas is more of a stand up guy. So I think they're different enough where it's like comparing them is kind of apples to oranges or oranges type
little bit
to me.
Yeah,
they're both really good. I think that's fair to say. Mo Kamara, again, I love me some Mo Kamara. He's so good. He's one of my favorite value players at any position in this whole class. Like I know wherever Mo goes, it's going to be underdrafted. Like it's going to be too late or later than it should have been because he is such a good pass rusher.
He's one of those guys in the redraft that's going to get drafted higher for sure.
100%. 100%. Yeah. Solomon Bird, I think, will go very late because he's one of these guys where the testing numbers aren't good, but the tape is really good. And I'm kind of just trusting the tape on this one. And again, he's going to go late because of the testing numbers. Mm-hmm. People are going to see, you know, the RAS and they were like, oh, I don't know about that. And I'm like, hey, man, if you're spending sixth round pick on Solomon Bird, just get him in the building. And then when you're actually playing football, you're going to be like, oh, shit, he's actually a really good football player. I guess that's what really matters here. Like, I love Bird. Marshawn Nealon, I really thought about putting him in there.
Yeah, strong choice.
I wanted to talk about the small school kid, Javon Solomon, but Marshawn Nealon's awesome. Well, I guess. Nah, Western Michigan's not a small school. It's mid.
It's mid, school, and right? It's surprising because you were surprised that another player like Solomon, I think you were talking about Solomon Bird, and said you were surprised that in the NIL and transfer portal era that Bird wasn't somewhere else, where other schools came for Nealon last year, big time, and somehow donors at Western Michigan stepped up and said, no, we're keeping our star pass rusher, and he stayed to his credit, but that profile is slightly depressed. If he had ended up at Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, you name it, right? He would have a higher profile because his tape is really good. His testing is really good, unlike Bird. He's going to be that sort of first off the board, second round of edge rushers in this draft, and might outproduce a bunch, probably will outproduce at least some of the top guys, because he could have been, you know. And I really think that line is extremely thin. Very talented player. If he wasn't on your list, he was going to be on mine.
And you know me, I'm a sucker for pass rushers that stand up over the center and just look them dead in the eyes and then run over them on third down. They used him in like that kind of like Jadeveon Clowney type thing where it's like, yeah, he's a big end, but on third down, he's in the A-gaps. Have fun with that. Mason Smith, I brought him up. I'm throwing out a comp to Stephon Tuitt for him. Stephon was a better prospect because he had more consistency. Obviously, the medicals were better for Stephon coming out, but I'm talking like ceiling. Like, what can Mason Smith be? Like, he can be Stephon Tuitt. He has all those tools, and I think he has that skill set too. Like, I love Mason Smith. I understand he's going to go lower than a lot of guys because of the medicals and consistency and blah, 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 blah. But, like, if we're just talking about what he can be, he's awesome. Renardo Green, I've talked about him ad nauseum at this point. One of the best press man corners in this class. Should be a second-round pick, in my opinion. Mike Sainristil still might be the best pure nickel in this class. Like, if I was drafting a nickel, I would put Cooper DeJean at the top of the list, but I understand a lot of people think Cooper DeJean is an outside corner. But if we're just talking about guys where everybody agrees they're a nickel, Mike Sainristil still is the best pure one in this class. Kalen Bullock, free safety extraordinaire from USC, very rangy. Chris Jenkins, just a fucking freak of nature, man. Morgan Fox plus is how I describe him. Like, if you want somebody who can be, I talked about Fisk being like that 4-eye, right? Mm-hmm. 4-eye, 5 technique, you know, can also play a lot in 3 technique. If you want somebody who's going to live in that role, it's Chris Jenkins, because he's got all the athleticism, or at least most of the athleticism of Fisk, but he also has the extra length. So he can do all of the lock, peak, shed stuff that I don't like. Fisk, I think, is going to be more focusing on penetration, whereas Jenkins is more going to be like, you know, older brother to younger brother, just holding you back, being like, you can't touch me, you can't touch me. Like, he's so long and so powerful. I love him in that 4-eye, like 5 technique kind of role. And then Brandon Dorlus, same kind of thing. Like, he strikes me as a defensive end and a 4-down front that kicks inside on third down. Kind of like in that Michael Bennett type vibe.
Yeah, you don't have to sell me on Dorlus. Like, Dorlus is, I love Dorlus, and I think because people can't put him in a specific box, he's kind of, usually that's a good thing, right? Oh, he could do more than one role. But sometimes when people can't identify like which one might be better, I feel like it drops guys down because they're just a little less sure of their role, of their utilization. Dorlus, to me, has great versatility, great size, really good tape, nice athleticism. I was looking at Dorlus last summer, and there's very few guys, you know, that I sort of am looking at, even though I know they're not going to get drafted. Dorlus decided to go back to Oregon, and I was just like, wait till he comes out, man. That is a very useful, versatile guy. Love Brandon Dorlus. Glad he made your list.
What do you think about, like, the QJF type role? Quentin Jefferson for those.
Yes. I think you could say 3 different guys in the NFL and say, do you think Dorlus could play that role? And I'd be like, yes. And that alone makes him a very valuable player for me. I think Lanning used him that way at Oregon. And again, almost his impact got a little bit diluted because it wasn't all in one place or one role. And so people kind of just don't know what to do with him. And I think that means they're underestimating. Really like Brandon Dorlus.
All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for our 2024 Defensive Gems episode. A lot of really good players we talked about today. I mean, there's dozens and dozens more that we could have hit on. There's going to be hundreds drafted in this class, and we're going to have thoughts on each and every one of them. Make sure to come back for our draft live stream. We're going to be live for 3 straight days from that back corner right there, talking about every single pick as it happens. I think we do like 17, 18 hours of live streams here on the channel during the draft. So EJ's coming back down for that next month. If you guys have your own defensive gems, of course, feel free to put those in the comments down below.
Yeah, we want to see your top five because everybody's like, well, I don't think your top five is great. Well, put your top five in the comments and we'll put our top five against your top five. We'll have fun with it.
We also want to thank our executive producers, by the way. I can't remember if I did that in the last episode, but I do want to make sure I do it in this one. These are all of our executive producers in the EP tier on Patreon. Iken, Consti, Andrew, Liam, Connor, and Mike L. I apologize for missing it last show. You guys helped make this whole thing possible. We appreciate your support. Also, if you guys want to indirectly and or directly support the show, bootleg merch is available over on our clothing partner, Homage. They don't just carry bootleg merch, though. They also carry merch for every single NFL team because they have an NFL license, as well as college teams, movies, shows, pretty much anything that you probably happen to like. Browse their whole catalog. If you happen to like anything on the site and you use our link to get to the site, we get a cut of whatever you purchase. So again, good way to indirectly support the show. I don't think I have anything else. EJ, what's our next episode that we're doing? I can't remember. Oh, it's JT.
Yeah, we've got quarterbacks with JT O'Sullivan, which we recorded while I was down for Caleb's Pro Day. That was a ton of fun. JT was on the show last year as well talking about quarterbacks, and this year he said, hey, I'll drive up and do it in person. I said, if you drive up to Brett's, I'll fly down for that. That sounds great. One of my favorite things about JT, same guy in person, just having coffee in your kitchen or sitting down on the couch talking quarterbacks. When the camera turns on, there is no difference. What you see is what you get with JT. I love that. It's a tremendous episode. We're just putting some film in it, so it'll take a little bit, but we'll be dropping some of our Shrine Bowl interviews in the interim, so the draft content will just keep rolling on. We're just trying to get it all out to you. Order matters a little bit less to us right now because we're just trying to fit it all in.
We'll be back very soon with something. We don't know what yet, but it'll be something depending on what gets edited first.
And yes, that's it.
Until then, later.
Take care.